朝日新聞ポッドキャスト。
Hi everyone, how are you? I'm Noriko Akiyama of Asahi Shimbun. Welcome to our bilingual podcast program. So this is English version, so please enjoy Japanese version also. So today's guest is...
Tom Mason. I'm Executive Director of the U.S.-Japan Bridging Foundation.
So U.S.-Japan Bridging Foundation is...
We're an organization that supports American college students, especially those from underrepresented communities, to come to Japan to study at a Japanese university for a semester or a year.
Okay, Tom. Welcome to our program. So please explain the foundation more in details later. So I introduced Tom just briefly. So he was born and raised in Boston, in a suburban area, Boston in America. And he first came to Japan in his high school. And then he majored in East Asia Studies in Cornell University. And then he came to Japan again as an English teacher. And he teach English in university in Tochigi. And then also he has a face of a social entrepreneur. He found Alex. What's the Alex? So please talk later, please. And then from 2020, he worked as a current job. So Tom, so you have been interested in Japan and Japanese so most of your lives.
Yes.
So what was the beginning? Yes.
Thanks so much, Noriko. I'm so happy to be here with you today. My interest in Asia really started when I was a young boy, probably about 4 or 5 years old. My family adopted a young infant from Korea.
Oh.
I have two brothers, and that means that there were three sons, and my parents wanted a daughter. So they adopted a young girl from Korea, and throughout my childhood, my family took me to Korean culture camps. We associated with Asia. We had lots of maps of Asia on the walls. So I became very interested in Asian culture. I remember reading Asian nursery rhymes, Korean nursery rhymes, for example. And then when I was in middle school, we had students from a high school in Japan.
Oh, your home?
Yeah, they did a homestay in our home every summer for 3 weeks every summer.
And homestay,
that continued.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic experience. I became very close to many of those students. And that really started my interest in Japanese language. After that, I participated in a program for American high school students to learn Japanese language. It was an intensive program. We studied all day from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m., literally. Every day for
12 hours,
eight weeks. And that was fantastic. And that was run by teachers from Cornell University. That's where I ended up going to do my undergraduate to study with those professors, where I majored in Japanese studies in the Department of Asian Studies. And from there, I went to Japan to teach English, and I started to build a career related to Japan and Japanese studies.
So when you came to first in Japan, so in your high school, where did you go? Where did you stay?
So the second part of that intensive Japanese language program, the following summer, there was a homestay experience. And in that program, I went to Takarazuka.
Hyogo.
That's right, Hyogo, right. And it was an incredible experience. I stayed with a host family for about 6 weeks. We stayed with them in the evenings, and then during the day, we studied Japanese intensively again. In the afternoon, we had field trips and things of that sort. And still to this day, I'm very close with that family.
Oh, still now.
Last week, I made a special trip to Takarazuka to see Hiroko-san, my mother, in Japan. She's now, I think, 88 years old, and she welcomed me with
open arms. So you're Okasa in Japan.
That's right, yes. It's a very, very special relationship, and we've been friends now for nearly 30 years.
Oh, that's good. So why did you want to come back to Japan again?
As an English teacher, right after I graduated from university, I think the main reason was I developed this strong interest in Japan. And of course, I wanted to live in Japan as an adult and experience Japanese culture, learn the Japanese language, and to really see if I could build a career related to Japan. In that time, I ended up going to Japan as an English teacher in Tochigi.
So please share some of your memories in Tochigi.
Oh my goodness. Tochigi is the best kept secret in Japan. I do have to say, I think it's one of the best prefectures. While I was at the university, I was also teaching at a high school affiliated with the university. That's actually where I started.
Yeah.
And I was given the opportunity to be a tannin, a homeroom teacher at that school. It was called the Eigo Ryugaku course, the study abroad course.
Yeah.
And students who went through the course, they ended up going to Australia during their second year. And it was a fantastic opportunity to really understand how the Japanese education system works. We did parent conferences with the parents of the students in my class, for example. So just being treated as a member of that school community, a full member, was really important to me in my experience there.
Mm-hmm. So you taught lots of students.
Yes. Yeah. I think we had 16 students in the class, and 16 of them went to Australia for a year every second year. Mm. And in addition to that, of course, I had students from all over the school.
So maybe students called you as a Tom-sensei?
Oh, no. I'm not that friendly. No, but I did. I intentionally asked them to call me Mr. Mason. Mm. And the reason is that's what we would expect in an American school system. And I wanted to share with the students what it would be like if they were students in the United States.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that high school is like an American high school in Tochigi.
It's a real Japanese high school, but they had a special class only for students who wanted to study abroad.
And after that, not after that, so during your work in Japan, so you found, so your organization, the name of Alex.
That's right. That's right.
What is the Alex?
So Alex is a nonprofit organization. Yes. It stands for the Alliance for Language Learning and Educational Exchange. Learning and Educational Exchange. A lot of people think that my name is Alex. Yeah. I'm Tom.
Yes.
The name of the organization is Alex. And it was actually founded at Cornell University, where I was a graduate student in Asian studies. And the purpose of the organization is to increase the number of Japanese, Chinese, and Korean language programs at universities in the United States. And we do that by recruiting graduate students from Japan, training them in Japanese language pedagogy. They go through an 8-week summer program, partly at Cornell University. And then once that program finishes, they go to we have around 230 partner universities that have participated in the program. And at those schools, they teach Japanese. Because they're teaching Japanese, this American university will pay their full tuition, their room, and their food, and oftentimes health insurance.
Really?
So it's a very inexpensive way to study abroad.
Yeah, because now the to study U.S. is really, really expensive.
It's really, really expensive. We probably need one more really, really, really expensive. So the benefit of this program to the university is that they're able to hire a trained professional instructor at a very low cost. And the benefit for the incoming Japanese graduate student is that the cost of studying abroad is about 1/5 of what it would be if they were to pay directly to the university.
So how did you get the inspiration of this scheme?
Thank you. This Alex is the successor of an organization that existed before Alex called Exchange Japan. It was founded by two extraordinary individuals, Terumasa Akio and Eleanor Jordan. Mm. And Eleanor Jordan was my professor's professor at Cornell University, a specialist in Japanese pedagogy. And together in 1988, this is when the Japanese economy was booming.
Yes.
American universities wanted to add Japanese language programs, but there was a deficit in the number of trained Japanese language instructors. And so Eleanor Jordan got together with Akio-san, and they built this organization using the teaching assistant system. The teaching assistant system is not unique to Alex. It's very common in the United States. So even myself coming up, I was a research assistant at Cornell for my graduate school. That's how I paid for my studies. And that system was extraordinarily successful. The first year, I think in 1988, the organization, they started over 50 Japanese language programs.
Oh.
So if you think about Japanese studies in the United States, many of the Japanese language programs were started by this organization, Exchange Japan. And then as the organization hit around 16, 17 years in 2000, 2001, there started to be less schools wanting to do Japanese language, build new programs. That organization started to slow down. They had to stop operations. I was a student at Cornell, saw that that organization was coming to a close and decided, we can't let this stop. Mm. Let's rebuild. Mm. So we renamed it Alex. Yeah. We continued with the professorial team and we built it up to, we do around, in 2019, before the pandemic, we had 65 participants join the program. Mm.
So Alex already had how many graduation people, alumni?
We're well over 1,000. We may be close to 1,500 right now.
Oh, 1,500.
Incredible.
Oh, incredible. Yeah.
The success stories are amazing. I mean, not only if we look at the number of universities that now have Japanese language programs and that are taught by Alex alumni, but if one thinks about the number of American students that are being taught by Alex teachers or Alex alumni, it's in the tens of thousands easily. Beyond that, if you look at schools like Harvard University, I think 5 of the 7 Japanese instructors at the university are graduates of the Alex program. Cornell University, everyone is a graduate of either Alex or Exchange Japan, the predecessor. And this impact continues all the way down to the community college. Mm. Johnson Community College in Kansas is entirely staffed by Alex graduates. So the impact on the field has been tremendous. I think Alex plays a very important role in Japanese language pedagogy and U.S.-Japan relations in general.
That's good.
I am Asahi Shimbun Arukiki, the podcast of the Sokuhou News. I am a podcaster. I am a teacher. I am a teacher. I am a teacher. 趣味の作業中でも何かしながら最新のニュースをフォローできます。あなたの知りたいニュースどこででも朝日新聞ある聞き、たった数分で今日のニュースをまとめ聞き。
But so you left the Alex 2020 and moved to the US Bridging Japan Bridging Foundation.
That's right. So, I founded Alex in 2023 with a very, very close friend of mine. And then after 18 years, I decided that it was time to move on. And we hired a team to continue the good work of Alex. I moved to the U.S.-Japan Bridging Foundation, which is doing extraordinary work in bringing underrepresented students to Japan to study at college for a semester or an academic year.
So the founding resource is a donation?
It's 100% donations. Mm. About 50% come from individuals, 30% perhaps from corporations, and then another 20% or so from foundations, private foundations.
So the only from the U.S. student to Japan?
That's right. Right now we focus on bringing U.S. students to Japan.
So that is just a mirror, the opposite of Alex.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Alex provides scholarships for the Americans to go to the U.S.
Yes.
And Bridging provides scholarships for Japanese too.
So that means you support the both way exchange.
That's right. That's right. Yes. That's right. Yes, yes, yes.
So please give me us some episode. Japan Bridging Foundation.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's so many. It's hard to choose one or two. But one comes to mind. There's a young student. He's an African-American student who was in a, I think he started in a four-year college, and he wasn't too sure of his direction, so he ended up dropping out of that college. Went to another state university and decided that he wanted to do something related to art studies. And he found the Bridging Foundation, joined and received the Bridging Foundation scholarship, and ended up studying in Kyoto he had a deep interest in manga.
Oh.
So in Kyoto, he was befriended by a very well-known manga
artist. Yes, manga studies. Yes.
And there, he developed his interest, went back to the U.S., graduated, ended up going on to graduate school. Mm. He's now taking a master's degree in fine arts. Came to Japan just recently, studied or visited Chiba Tetsuya-san, Ashita no Joe, right? And so now he's well on his way to building a career as a manga professional, and his dream is to be the first professor of manga practice in the United States. And it's really that scholarship that made it possible for him to come to Japan that first time.
So that means, so without the foundation, he cannot come to Japan, he cannot achieve his dream.
And that's the goal of the Bridging Foundation. We're recruiting students from the mid-tier institutions, from the historically black colleges and universities, from the non-flagship state universities. If we can find students, especially minority students, whose lives we can change by offering them the opportunity to study abroad, we can change the face, the literal face of U.S.-Japan relations. It's important when we think about relations between the two countries that the people who are having those dialogues are representative of those two countries.
So what's the difficulties you faced to run such a kind of organization? Example, for so financial
Right. For the Bridging Foundation, it's certainly funding. Mm. We're always looking to increase the number of donations that we receive so that we can support more students. And I've been really pleased with the support of the community, both individuals and corporations, foundations. They understand that this is a critical need at this moment in time. The more organizations and supporters that we can bring into the community, I think the more successful will be. The relationship as a whole will improve. And if we look towards the future, the next generation of leaders will be formed through these types of programs.
Mm, that's good. And so, Tom, so through the Alex, or so you studied in Japan. You studied not only in Japan, but also Taiwan.
Yes, I did. Yes. My interest in Asia has grown the longer I've been here. And I received a fellowship from the government of Taiwan to study at National Taiwan University. Did that for a year, learned Chinese, and then went to Shanghai to actually build the China branch of the Alex Foundation. Interestingly, in Noriko, that's where I met my wife, who is a professor of international education, international higher education policy. In some ways, researching what I do professionally, not what I do, what I specifically do, but what the field does and the impact it has in the world on society.
So that means you can speak, of course, English, Japanese, and Chinese.
Yes.
Mandarin.
Yes.
Oh, trilingual.
Thank you.
But so your whole life is a kind of exchange. So the study, or you have been interested in exchange, or so grassroots diplomacy.
That's right.
So how do you think, what's the significance of the grassroots diplomacy? So like you have been engaged in.
Yeah, that's a super question. It's really important right now because I think that funding for grassroots diplomacy is becoming harder to come by at this point in time. Yeah. But really, it's the foundation for everything that we do. All national diplomacy is built on relationships that people have to each other.
Yeah.
And we need to continue to increase the number of people that have personal relationships, whether it be between the Japanese people and the U.S. people, or between any country. Because what happens at the local level is reflected at what happens at the national level. Mm. If we think about, for example, some of the policy decisions that the United States government, that the U.S. government has made over the last 8 years or so. For example, President Trump, if we go back and think, how would his relationship to the world be different if he had had the opportunity to study abroad, or if he had chosen to study abroad? the world may be a different place right now.
Oh, yes, yes. I think so too. Yes, I totally agree. Yeah.
It's interesting, right? Because Obama did grow up partly in Indonesia. And I think that's very much reflected in his worldview and many of the decisions that he made as president and the way that he guided his administration.
So to know different culture and to live in the different country is really, really significant.
It's absolutely significant. Yeah. Right, right. And for the U.S.-Japan Bridging Foundation, for example, we would love it if the students that we bring to Japan build a Japan-related career. That would be fantastic. But in fact, not everyone can do that. So our goal is to broaden one's worldview. If we can bring people who otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to come to Japan and to see the world, then that experience will be reflected in everything that they do once they return to their home country. And we certainly do hope that many of those people will build a career related to Japan. It doesn't necessarily need to be in Japan. We're planting many seeds, and many of those seeds will grow in ways that we don't expect. And that's what's so exciting about the work.
Yeah. But on the other hand, it is pointed out that in Japan, the younger generation are not interested in studying abroad. And the number of the studying abroad is decreasing. So why? How do you think about that?
I think that's certainly true. So, for example, for the ALEKS program in the 2000s, we used to have 300 applicants for the program. Now we have about 125 or so. So there's a big decrease. The numbers also show that there's fewer Japanese studying abroad. The reasons are plentiful. I think the Japanese economy is doing well. It's easier for Japanese people to find jobs in Japan. It's no longer necessary to study abroad in order to find an excellent job in Japan. There are now many programs in Japan where one can study in English, for example. One can study in Australia or England and get a master's degree for a year. There's a lot more competition among Australian, Asian universities, for example. But it's critically important. It doesn't need to be the United States, but it's critically important for Japanese people to leave Japan and to see the world at some point, hopefully in their university career or just afterwards. In just the same way, it's critically important for Americans to leave their country and to see the world in some way early in their lives. And I hope that the programs that I've been running, whether it be the ALEKS Foundation or the U.S.-Japan Bridging Foundation, provides that opportunity to people that want to take advantage of it.
So this is the last question. Please give the message to the younger generation in Japan who are curious about the studying abroad, but who cannot decide to go to abroad.
Oh, sure, sure. It's so exciting. I mean, I think that there are probably so many people in Japan who have the idea that they'd like to study abroad, but just don't know how to make that idea come to life. And I would say, research, research, research. There are ways to make everything happen. I just share a story, of one individual who did the ALEKS program. She was from Osaka. She applied to the ALEKS program, but her English didn't meet the minimum score. So she said, listen, Tom, I'm going to come back next year with an even stronger score. And she did. She came back with an extraordinary TOEFL score. We sent her to a school in Texas where she did a master's in applied linguistics. She ended up getting a job at an elite liberal arts college. Oh. That was great. There she won a national award as to recognize her skill in Japanese language teaching.
Oh, great.
She ended up moving to an elite university in Boston, and now she is a full-time lecturer there.
Oh, great.
So if you are interested in studying abroad, whether it be ALEKS or whether it be some other scheme, you know, hold on to that dream and make it happen. You can do it.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Noriko.
Yeah. So this is our program. Thank you so much. See you next time. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
So today's guest was Tom Mason. I'm still thinking about I want to go to abroad to study. Yes, still. So one day I might apply, Alex, maybe. So thank you, Tom. Bye.